One early morning recently, I found myself driving a back road past miles and miles of fruit orchards in central California. The sun was just peeking over the hills, and as I drove, I couldn't get the fact out of my mind that these fruit trees, these miles and miles of fruit trees, would soon feed the entire world. The U.S. feeds the world. We also teach the world. I can remember being in Shanghai, China, and a university professor telling me that they are teaching their future teachers a more transformational approach, very similar to what we're doing in the United States, with teachers as the activators. It made me wonder if those fruit orchards, all lined up in a traditional way, were very much like children, all lined up in rows, and I wondered how it all might be different in the next 10 to 20 years. And it's that looking into the future that I introduce you to my guest today. As I drove, it made me think about my guest, Jeff Udick. And Jeff sees the world certainly as it is. He's a sought-after teacher, he's a sought-after speaker, because of his ability to see where we are and then the possibilities of what the world might be, especially in the world of education. He talks about AI, and then in our after-action review in the second part, he talks about a time where he looked to the future for everyone else, but he forgot to do it for himself and his career. I'm Peter Stiepelman, and this is An Imperfect Leader. Today on An Imperfect Leader, Jeff Udick is my guest. And Jeff is a highly regarded speaker, consultant, podcaster, author. He has dedicated his career to exploring the intersection of technology and our lives. Jeff is widely recognized as an expert in educational technology integration, innovative practices, and corporate onboarding programs. Jeff's work has helped to shape the way we think about technology and its role in our lives, and his insights continue to inspire leaders to embrace new technologies and approaches in their practice. Jeff, welcome to An Imperfect Leader.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation today.
I mentioned this to Jeff earlier. He sounds so good, doesn't he? My gosh, it's nice to talk with somebody who has really nice microphones.
Yeah, well, when podcasting is part of the way that you also spread your message, you know, you get much like you, you get the good equipment, and it makes it for a different interview for sure.
Certainly, it feels so good. So, Jeff, I've so enjoyed learning more about you. I really enjoyed your podcast, Shifting Schools. And just as an aside, I love learning that you worked with Enumclaw School District, because on a previous episode, Mike Nelson, who had been their superintendent, he had been a guest. And it's like things coming totally full circle. He described such a special school district, and certainly your work with them confirms that.
Yeah, I mean, they are a great school district. Mike Nelson is probably one of, you know, the best superintendents that I have had the opportunity to work with. If you just want to see somebody who just spews leadership, it is Mike Nelson.
And yeah. I work leadership with driven by empathy.
Oh,
I mean,
my
you
gosh.
Can just, he just exudes compassion.
Yes.
Right?
It's just unbelievable. I learned so much from him as a consultant who was being hired to come in and working with their district for, I think, over 5 years. I learned so much from him around just being an empathetical leader. And the things that he was doing within his district were incredible. And the things he's still doing today, there's WASA. So I still work very closely with him. Actually,
That's
I was just
great.
On an email with him earlier today.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Well, yeah, I would say that when consultants are working in a school district, and if they can have that sort of reciprocal arrangement, that reciprocity of what we can learn from each other, I think that makes for valuable.
Yeah. And I'll tell your listeners, if you haven't listened to Mike Nelson's episode here on the podcast, please do go back and listen to it. It is totally worth it. He's an incredible, I mean, he was the superintendent of the year here in Washington State a few years ago as well. So he's an incredible
leader. Gonna be blushing. I can feel it.
Yeah,
it's be great.
That's good for him. He needs the blush.
Exactly. Well, listen, the more I read about Shifting Schools, the more I listened to your podcast, I was really struck by so many of the topics that you discussed, like from the value of esports to cell phones in the classroom, how teachers, especially post-pandemic teachers, are craving a sanctuary from distraction.
Yeah.
And to your point that it will be tough conversations about phones and then the glasses and the watches and all the kinds of ways that our kids will be able to interact with the world around them. And then my takeaway is that it's clear that what you're talking about is currently absolutely on the minds of teachers and kids as they look to the future of schooling. So I wonder, I guess my first question would be, would you talk just a little bit about the work that you do with schools and school districts?
Yeah, so I am an independent consultant. I have been since 2012. Before that, I was a classroom teacher, IT director, administrator, I kind of held all the roles. My wife and I worked overseas for 10 years, which gave me a very global perspective on a lot of just things that are happening. I still do quite a bit of work globally as well. I've presented twice at UN-sponsored conferences around global education. And so really that is my view. And what we're viewing the lens through, or the lens that I'm constantly viewing through, especially with schools, is this idea of what I always hold true to myself is how are we making sure that we're preparing students for their future, not our past? And that is my driver. If you are in the K-12 education space, we all say that we're student-centered, but what does that really mean? And for me, that means not being student-centered for me is making sure that the things that we are doing are preparing them for their future and not our past. And that's really difficult in today's world that is changing so quickly, and a lot of it having to do with technology, but also social issues. We are seeing, and I am hearing from superintendents across the nation and across the world, that behavior is different after COVID. We are seeing some of the work that I do is around generational leadership. Now that we are seeing, you know, we still have a lot of the baby boomer generation in place, but we also have a lot of millennials. I'm working with districts that are 50, 60% millennial teachers with boomer administrators, and there is a conflict around Total. Generational
There's
leadership.
So much tension. Yeah.
And a lot of that tension has nothing to do with education. It has to do with understanding generational norms. And I take that work and I also apply that to our kids. You know, when we talk about cell phones, for better or for worse, these kids have grown up on devices. You know, here in America, we have dropped from before COVID, we were the average age of a child touching a connected device for the first time was around age 2. After COVID, we're down to 18 months. And so we're having kids come into our schools who, for many of them, the only thing they know is to learn through a screen or is to work through a screen. And so we're even doing some of the work that we're doing is working with kindergarten teachers around teaching two different alphabets. You have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then you have Q, W, E, R, Y, right? Because for some of our kids, they don't understand why B comes after A. It should be S comes after A. And so we're having to prepare students for a future where keyboards are going to be there. And we're never, as many times as we tried in society to change the keyboard, it doesn't look like it's going to get changed. So there's just a different aspect of that. And then we're dealing with things with cell phones on all different types of levels. We talk about esports. You know, a lot of schools are starting to get into the esports space. For better or for worse, this is a path for many of our students.
When I was a superintendent, we absolutely supported esports. And I remember at an open house night, a ninth grader came up to me with his parent. And the parent said he wants to say something to you. The kid was somewhat socially awkward, somewhat removed, totally an introvert, you could tell. And he just said, thank you. And I said, for what? And the mom said, because for the first time, he feels like he belongs here at school, that he is seen because he's part of this esports team. They're part of they were playing, what were they playing? League of Legends, right?
League of Legends,
team, team of four, and they have to sort of coordinate with each other. They all play different roles. Yeah. And if you go into the auditorium, you've got play-by-play announcers.
That's right.
Got a big screen up, kids are cheering, and you're going, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah. And this is the thing, I think one of our mindset shifts is it's not about just kids sitting and playing games. Sure, that's part of it. But there's play-by-play announcers. You need to know how to live stream to Twitch. You need to know how to market. I mean, there's so many other avenues. I mean, it is bigger than the NFL, which here in the States, we think is like the biggest thing. It's bigger than the NFL and most people don't know it. And so we're trying to figure out, okay, what does that mean for a generation? The latest thing I've been working on, of course, is AI. I mean, that's where all of our work has been of late. Supporting schools, just thinking about what shifts need to be made. Again, we're in this moment in time where as educational institutions, we have to move forward. For better or for worse, it is going to be part of our students' lives in the future, right? Not preparing them for our past, but for their future. And their future is driven by AI.
So in the book that I wrote recently and in the leadership model that I use to advise others, there's a dimension called collective aspiration. And that's really like the heart of an organization's work. Mm-hmm. And inside that dimension, there is a term, compelling purpose. And compelling purpose is such an important component because it gets to Peter Senge's question of like, what do we want to create together? Mm-hmm. And when I heard a keynote that you were giving, and I heard you describe how communities should be thinking about the children in K-12 schools now as they consider their goals for the future. And you said it much better than I just did, but it was essentially like the notion that you develop plans for the future. So to your point about like you know, we're for their future now, not their past. Or as others have described it, as we're preparing kids for unpredictable, never changing worlds. And what we know that is predictable is that it will keep changing.
Yes.
And so, you know, so many communities try to recreate their past. And you made a distinction, I think you alluded to it a moment ago, which is that the current generation is considered a media first generation. And I suspect that AI is a part of that concept. And so am I capturing this right? And then B, like, what does it mean to be media first? And what should school leaders be thinking about as they plan the future of schools?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I would agree with you that, you know, this is the second generation that we would say is media first. I would say the millennial generation was our first, and yet they were kind of split. Based on just kind of you can go back to when the iPhone came out, was a major shift. Before that, it was gaming consoles. If anybody remembers Atari and Nintendo, we're talking the originals. There's two generations that are in our school right now. We've got, the tail end of Generation Z, which right now is about 13 years old and older. So your middle school, high school kids. And then you've got this new generation called Generation Alpha, which we don't know a lot about. Purdue has just released probably the first research that I've seen on it. And I can give you a link to that for the show notes. But they've just released some of the first kind of looking at what this generation is going to look like. And they're already coming up with, there's reasons why there are social behaviors happening in schools. And it has very little to do with the pandemic, and more has to do with social norms that these kids are being raised in. But the research is really showing that, you know, this generation has been so locked down and they have less freedoms than any generation before them, that we have a generation who does not know what privacy is. We try to talk to kids in schools about privacy and they look at you like, what, why are you trying to talk to me about privacy?
Right. And the term public and permanent is so foreign to them, right?
Well, and part of it is
public and permanent. They go, So it was my entire life.
Yeah. And part of it is, you know, the average child in America has over 5,000 photos uploaded to them on Facebook before age 5. They had no right to those. And they still today don't have any rights to those. You have, you know, children who are never allowed to be alone. You then start to hit middle school, and where your social behaviors and human development 101 has taught us that your job is to pull away from your parents and figure out who you are with your own kind and your own age group. Parents go and stick a tracking device on them called a cell phone, and they still don't have any time away.
Right.
So what has happened and what the research shows is we, society, adults, have pushed them into social networks to have quote unquote freedom away from adults. And then we yell at them for being in there. And that's one of the big shifts, right? And I love this. We had an interview the other day and a researcher came out and said, it's called screen language. Like, we are not teaching screen language to a generation and to the world that spends most of their time on screens, as you and I are here zooming, right? On a screen, having a conversation. And so there's this whole push, an idea around, how do we train a media first generation? We are looking at a generation that learns more through YouTube. If you ask any student, how they learn through YouTube. This is why pre-pandemic in 2014, 2015, I was doing trainings with teachers saying the way that you engage this generation is through instructional videos. The pandemic hits, number one thing we were training teachers on, instructional videos.
Right.
Wow. Still today, we are seeing that teachers don't want to do it because they're not trained in how to make great instructional videos. But teachers who are still making instructional videos are still seeing exponential growth in learning. Because you are talking to a brain that has been watching videos since they were 18 months old. But we also have to understand that the brains are being wired, and we all learn through YouTube videos. We all watch how-to videos, and our job in schools is trying to figure out balance the, what's the media consumption we have? How are we making sure we're leveraging media in really powerful ways for learning? And at the same time, making sure kids have the opportunity to talk to each other and build those inner
communication skills. That's what I was about to ask you. Is like, okay, so instructional videos are certainly, it sounds like, important in terms of the brains that we're talking about now.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've noticed also is that there's been an increase in opportunities for kids to do collaborative work. And when you think about that, my thought was, well, that makes total sense. They've been on computers throughout the pandemic. They've been doing virtual learning. They do all this work, but yet they haven't learned how to look at each other in the eye. And in some cultures, that's not appropriate. Don't look in the eye, right?
Yes,
but in terms of like being able to face-to-face, learn from each other, struggle with each other, that productive struggle, and then achieve together.
And I 100% agree. And I think technology can help leverage that. The issue that I am seeing in most schools, when we say, are you using technology with kids? They're saying, yes, our math curriculum is there. And so kids go over, they put on headphones, and they do, for better or for worse, game-based flashcards.
Right.
With interacting with nobody, just them and a screen. And that's not what I'm on. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how do you leverage technology in ways that are preparing them for the future, which is remote work, right? Which is 50%. We are on track right now for 50% of our workforce to be individual business owning consultants, because it's getting more and more expensive to have employees. So more and more businesses are hiring consultants. You need to know how to sell yourself over a Zoom. We are seeing more and more universities, thanks to AI, no longer asking for an entrance exam essay. They're doing away with all types of essay type writing. And the way that a lot of universities are pivoting to is going directly to an interview process via Zoom. So getting kids interacting this way with each other, face to face, 100% all the time. Classrooms need to be noisy and loud and should be chaotic. That's a great classroom. But we also have to support kids in understanding, you know, your next interview could be over Zoom. How do you sell yourself? How do you have a nice background? How do you make sure that if you are applying for that job or applying to university, you know how to interact this way in an interpersonal way over video as well? Because that we are leveraging that, and industry is leveraging that as well.
How does the term an imperfect leader resonate with you?
Oh, man, that's a great question. And I just think the imperfect leader for me is always being excited about innovation, always being willing to fail. And, you know, I've ran company number 6, I think, at the moment. I've started every type of company, corporation. And I think the thing for me is the thing that, you know, some of them have failed, some of them have been successful. But I think for me, the thing that I come back through from a leadership lens is very early on, I had picked this up from a friend that was working at Amazon at the time, and he was leading an organization within Amazon. And he said, you know, the way we run our organization is we've got these posters on the wall that say fail fast, fail loud. And I thought, you know what? I really enjoy that. And I can see myself as a leader being in a way that is fail fast, fail loud. And that is our motto. If you are a consultant that's working with me, if you are one of my employees, we all work on a fail fast, fail loud attitude. We try stuff all the time. And if it fails, we celebrate, because that's learning. We learn through failure, right? Failure is everything that happens right before you become successful. I've got this slide that I show where, you know, we're raised to believe that failure is the opposite of success. And in an innovator's mindset, failure is everything that happens right before you become successful. And what holds most people back is on the opposite end of that spectrum is actually fear is what holds you back. And so we're trying to constantly move into this thing of how do you fail forward? And I know it's easy for me to say as a consultant, but I do this with schools all the time. And maybe I'm just lucky enough that I get to in the work that I do with schools is we'll put together a cohort and I'll spend a whole year with a cohort and we celebrate every failure that we have, you know? But you know what? We also celebrate every amazing success, because here's what happens. At the end of the day, there are always way more successes than there are failures.
And we'll be right back. Hey, district leaders, I know you already know this. In schools worldwide, cell phones are posing real challenges on student engagement and mental well-being, and I want you to meet Yonder, a proud sponsor of an imperfect leader. And let me share this story from a visit I made to some schools in Silicon Valley. I asked some kids what they liked about Yonder, and after some funny looks, they shared that actually, with Yonder, teachers don't have to battle with them over phones anymore. In fact, one kid said to me he didn't have to worry anymore about his parents texting him in class, and the kid next to him like sort of shoved him and goes, "Texting? My mom used to FaceTime me in class." I want to introduce you to a support system that increases teaching and learning. I want you to discover why a million students choose Yonder daily. Minimize distractions, maximize learning potential. To learn more, go to overyonder.com, Yondr. We're back for segment 2 of An Imperfect Leader called Imperfect Leadership in After Action. And my guest is Jeff Utek, a speaker, a consultant, an author, and a podcaster. And by the way, I saw that you were a speaker at the Kansas-Missouri Superintendents Leadership Forum. I used to love going to that. I used to get so many great ideas. So in this segment, though, we ask our guests to deconstruct a decision that they made, and then we discuss it. So, Jeff, what happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many pivot points in my career so far. It's so hard to go back and reflect on, different things that happened in different times. And I think one of them was, you know, that I think back and just, you know, hindsight being 2020, I came back here. I was 10 years overseas teaching and came back here and started full-time consulting in 2012 and started to build up, you know, a business of supporting schools, rolling out one-to-one programs, and started to get very well known here in the state of Washington, and things started growing. And so we built a company, and I did probably the first lesson that I learned is I went out and just started asking people that I already knew. I didn't actually interview anybody. I just said, hey, I know you and I know you're good. Why don't you, do you want to come be a part of the team? Do you want to become part of the team? Do you want to become part of the team? And built this team. Going back, you know, we talk about making sure you have the right people on the bus and then the right people sitting in the right seats in the bus from good to great. And I had none of that. You know, we just had a lot of people on the bus, all kind of heading in the same direction. There wasn't a lot of structure in place. And yet we were able to do some pretty cool things. We were doing some online stuff. We were doing some international stuff. We were doing some stuff here in specifically Washington State. And I think one of the things that I noticed is that all of a sudden, you know, I was doing more and more work just in the state of Washington. And that, now I didn't see it then. I didn't see it then. I was doing more and more work in the state of Washington. You know, even through the pandemic, the state of Washington hired me to do trainings for over 20,000 teachers just here in the state and supporting them with online transition. And after the pandemic ends and there's no work for a consultant because kids are coming back to the classrooms. Nobody wants to do technology. And all of a sudden I kind of looked up and I've got no leads because every school district I've been working with has now gone on and I was doing their things and they don't need me. And I was so focused on the state of Washington that I stopped going out and getting leads and talking to people outside of my circle. And next thing I know, I'm sitting here and I've got nothing. I'm not being booked for any conferences because nobody even knows that I'm still doing conferences. Nobody knows I'm keynoting things because I was so busy. And this is the way I like to put it now is I was so busy in the work, I wasn't doing the work. And I think as school leaders, we get caught a lot in this. I work with a lot of superintendents who I feel like sometimes get caught in doing the work of being a superintendent, that you're not working on being a superintendent, if that makes sense, right? We can all get sucked in as school leaders and as educators into doing the work without being able to take a step back and say, okay, well, what is the larger picture? What is the vision I'm working for? And I think we see this happen a lot in schools. You know, I've been through, again, being a teacher for 20 years, I've sat through my, you know, visioning statements in August when the superintendent gets up there and says, here's our vision for the year. And then the school year starts and we're all too busy doing the work that nobody's working on it.
Yeah. There's a sort of a personal or a productivity guru named David Allen. I'm sure you're familiar with David Allen's Getting Things Done. And I often coach administrators and leaders to think about how where they want to be sort of, you know, 1 to 3 years from now, because that really should be the role of a superintendent and to some degree a principal. And yet they are stuck in what is happening now. They're just on the runway, right? They're just not able to even take off. They're not even taxing. They're just still at the gate, just handling, like there's somebody still arguing about whether or not they have a seat on this plane.
Exactly.
And they're not at all thinking about where they want to actually fly. What's their destination? So if I understand correctly, in terms of your scenario, here you are, you start this company, you're recruiting lots of people. And it sounds like with good intentions and good intuition without maybe a clear process. Yeah. And to use your bus metaphor, everybody's sort of on the bus and you're traveling from place to place in terms of being able to support school districts. The pandemic hits, you are hit hard in terms of like, let's go, we need your support and your wisdom. And then the pandemic ends and you are not taking your own advice in terms of you're planning for the now without thinking into the future. Yeah. So typically my question that follows is what got overlooked? It seems pretty clear, but in terms of hearing me summarize what I think you said to me, and then in terms of just how you described it, are there any other things that you feel like got overlooked?
I think just making sure I've been way more intentional of making sure I have the right people in the right positions. You know, that company I ended up folding that company or leaving that company. I actually sold my shares to one of the other members of the company and it's still going strong. And then just went back to my own consulting, Jeff Udick Consulting, and doing it that way. And you know, this time around, that's what I've learned is it's not just about getting people on the bus, but making sure that you're very intentional about where those people fit and making sure those people are also supporting you to pick your head up every once in a while and say, what is the destination? And I know I need that. I am a big dreamer. A lot of times my problem is, and just this is knowing yourself as a leader, I'm a big dreamer. I would do vision statements all day if I could, but I need somebody to do the detail work.
Right,
that's not my strength, right? And so just trying to be very, you know, specific on, you know, where that goes and how do you make sure you've got the right people to support you and support the organization that you're building. I think it's so key. But I mean, this is nothing new to leaders, but it's just, I think we can't hear it enough, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say is that, yes, it's nothing new, but those who are listening on a regular basis and driving their cars and kind of considering what your message is in terms of the business you were building and what you learn, they can take that and apply it to their own teams in terms of when they're in a conference room with their cabinets, for example, and whether or not they continue to be the first, you know, first responder when it comes to making a decision, which then sort of leads to the team being somewhat silent and just resigned to the fact that that leader, that superintendent, is going to carry the water to the next thing. And then all of a sudden they find themselves so overwhelmed by so many tasks that really could have been a team effort, but they didn't think about it at the time. As you think about this, what did you learn about relationships or what new relationships were formed?
Oh, man. I learned a lot about relationships. You know, part of the biggest, I think one of the biggest issues was in that company, when that company finally I decided to leave that company. You know, I said, like I told you, they were all good friends of mine, and all of a sudden things are falling apart and you've got the friendship thing with the business thing. And, you know, and that we don't get that maybe so much in education, but it was just a big learning curve around how do you navigate friendships inside of organizations and to be cautious the next time that maybe your good friends aren't the best partners. I mean, just a lot of learning around, again, the power of relationships when it comes to people inside of an organization. The thing that I've constantly leaned on, though, is making sure that I have solid, from the consultant side with school districts, is it's always about a relationship with me. I think, you know, we started the podcast by talking about Mike Nelson. I mean, Mike and I sat down so many times and talked about what his vision was for the district. Where was I supporting? And when I come in and work with the district, it's not just with teachers. We're doing teachers. We're doing leadership. We're coming at it from a special ed standpoint. Like we are working. I did 3 or 4 community things with Mike down in Enumclaw to bring on the Rotary Club. And we did parent nights, because when you're making transitional shifts, it's got to include everybody in education. Sure, you can bring me in to do the opening keynote in August, and that's fine. But if you really want to make an impact, let's take this on for 2-3 years. Because what we know is it takes the human mind that long to shift, especially for adults.
Well, and particularly if you're talking about a districts that have a sort of a revolving door of leaders who come in to take over, is that it'll take some time to build the kind of trust that they actually, that this vision that you have is going to be the vision for the future. Because otherwise they typically will take the stance of, I'll just wait to the next person because I've seen all this. I've been through this.
Yeah. And I have had, you know, I will be honest, I have had a couple conversations where I've sat down with superintendents or school boards and then haven't taken the contract and just said, you know what, we're just not going to be a fit. And I'm okay with that, because I would rather have a strong relationship with the leadership team of a school district from a consultant in than to come in and say, and because then I, you know, on my end, I'm going to be like, oh God, I got to go back to that school district when they don't really want me to be there. And they're probably saying, oh my gosh, here comes this guy that we signed this contract with. And we really don't, you know? And so, I mean, I spend hours with leadership teams and school board members. And before we ever get to a contract part, because I want to make sure that this relate, because it's going to be bumpy. Transition is bumpy,
right?
You know, the new transition we're in right now around AI is going to be bumpy. Every district's in a different place. We got every states are saying different things about what you should be able to do and not do. And society's trying to figure out what we're doing with AI. It's going to be a rocky road. And so you're going to want to make sure you've got those relationships that are strong, because it's going to be a couple of years to kind of get through this and see what comes out the other end.
What frustrated you?
What frustrated me, or what frustrates me?
Well, not in general. That could that's a much longer podcast probably. But although you seem like a delightful and engaging person who seems to be more optimistic than anything else.
Yeah.
But I mean, sort of like in this situation. So you told me what happened.
Yeah.
We discussed a little bit of what got overlooked.
Yeah.
You shared with me a little bit about what you learned about relationships. And that sort of the decision to not engage in a relationship is a super important one, right? To have the courage to say, you know what, this isn't really going to work for either of us. I think in the end, we'll probably be unfulfilled in this. And then I'm kind of curious, as you're looking back, what was frustrating about where you were, how you experienced it? And
I think the frustrating thing for me was that I knew better and I did it anyway. You know, and I don't think that I've struggled with that at times. You know, the pandemic ended and all of a sudden I was like, great, we made it through that. What's the next thing? And I you've just had this vision in my head. Like I lifted my head out of doing all this amazing work that we were doing. And we did incredible work through the pandemic and supporting teachers, saw some incredible things come out of it still today that we saw come out of it. But all of a sudden, you know, I was so busy doing the work that I lifted my head up going like, okay, what's next? And it's like a desert. Like there's nothing out there.
Yeah.
And the biggest frustration I had was not, I know that's what I should have been doing. I should have been making sure I was keeping relationships, fostering relationships, keeping these things building.
Yeah.
And I was so busy doing the work that by the time I lifted my head up, I was just like, uh-oh, there's no work out here. We literally did not do a training for 2 years. And you know, I was just thinking, what happened? And that's what happened. We didn't have our head up. We weren't looking what was coming next. We didn't know what was the next support that schools were going to need. And it got really quiet really fast in the consulting world. And it wasn't just me. I've talked to a lot of consultants, many that didn't make it through, made it through the pandemic because, you know, schools were in need and there was all this support that schools were needing.
Right.
But there became like, for us, the cliff was after the pandemic. And a lot of people weren't able to even make that through from a consultant end.
That's
to just like, because we all, I think, were so caught up in doing the work, we lost vision. And when you lose vision, things fall apart quick inside of an organization.
In the end, what was something that was good that came out of this?
The frustrating thing is there was no work for 2 years. We basically, you know, like I said, that company got dissolved because it ended up being just me again, because there was no money coming in. There's nothing we could do. And but it gives you a time to reset. And not that you can do this in education. I mean, this is the difference between the business world and education. Kids are showing up, right? You don't have an opportunity to do that. But we were able to take a moment where we reset and said, okay, what's going on? ChatGPT breaks. And that becomes the big thing. And here we are supporting schools around AI, supporting states. As you said, I'm just in Kansas. I was in Minnesota. I'm co-leading the work here being done with OSPI in the state of Washington around creating a policy and a framework at the state level here. And the interesting thing is all those relationships came out of the pandemic.
Right.
And so there's this impact of, yes, I was frustrated, but all of a sudden when the next need truly was there, I built these relationships where all of a sudden they knew they could trust me. We were coming back in and now we're rolling around AI. And what does that look like for schools? And once again, preparing students for their future and not our past.
What advice would you give to an aspiring leader?
One thing is just always keep your head up. You've got to know, you know, you've got to keep your eye on where are we going? And one of the things that I think that I like to support schools with is you're never going to have the perfect plan. It's never going to be perfect, especially in schools. We never get to, the thing especially in education, the thing we say is you're constantly building the plane while you fly it. You don't get to land the plane. You know, the only time you land the plane is for the month of July where everybody basically takes a breath and then it's back up to 30,000 feet within a week. Like, it's just like, there's just no time. And so understanding that it's never going to be a perfect plan, but you need to do it anyways. There's no such thing as a perfect way to roll out a one-to-one program. There's not going to be a perfect way to implement AI across your organization, but you need to do it anyway. And that is where this idea of fail fast and fail loud, I think, really comes into play. Is like, we've got to build these things. We've got to keep our eye on where do we want our students to be in 2 to 3 years? What are the dispositions and traits that we know kids are going to need in 2 or 3 years? One of the things that frustrates me is when I'm working with schools and they're saying, well, here are the jobs of the future, or we don't know what the jobs of the future are. And I'm like, you're right, you won't know, but we know what the dispositions are. That is very clear. The UN has come out and the UN has amazing research because they do this on a global scale, not my community, but globally. And it's still the same stuff: critical thinking, interpersonal communication, data analysis. Like, they have not changed. And so if we focus on what are the skills that we are making sure the next generation is getting, that is a 2 to 3 year thing that is not going to change. And if you keep your eye if you keep your eye up, you can actually drive the plane, even though the plane is being built behind you, and be okay with that. Be okay with that.
My guest again today was Jeff Udick, a speaker, a consultant, an author, a podcaster. Jeff, thank you so much for being a part of this program. I mean, you didn't say this in our lead up, but really, you're a futurist. You're pragmatic for sure, but you're helping school leaders and policymakers really consider the future and what it will look like for children. And so I really thank you also for helping us think about how we might all fail fast, fail loud, and do it in a way that brings people together for the common good of kids. So what a joy this has been. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Appreciate it.
Music for An Imperfect Leader was written and arranged by Ian Varley. Sam Falbo created our artwork, a wood print-inspired Daruma doll butterfly. Remember, imperfect leadership is not a scarlet letter. It's a badge of honor. It recognizes that serving as a lead learner is about being a vulnerable leader, an empathetic leader, a compassionate leader. And I'm proud to be an imperfect leader. I'm Peter Stiepelman. Please join me next time for another episode of An Imperfect Leader, Leadership in After Action.